Welcome to the Early Years Insight. I'm Kathy Leatherbarrow from Eden, and today's guests are Lucy and Matthew Pottinger, who are the owners of Grassroots Nurseries. Welcome.
Hi.
So we're going to talk about healthy lifestyles, and one thing that really interests me is that your nursery is totally plant-based.
Yeah, nearly, very nearly.
Very nearly.
We have a chef that is just a meat monster. He loves a good barbecue and all his meats at home, but even he, when he came, he was like, oh, okay, look, I can deal with this challenge. And even he now says he sees the value in plant produce for the children. So we're part of the Vitamin Angels program, so we're one of 12 nurseries in the UK that receives 5 portions of fruit, 5 portions of veg, and 3 portions of protein per child per week. In this, obviously, it's beans, legumes,
pulses.
Yeah. We do get eggs and cheese with it, but obviously then he has to be quite creative in terms of what he's making, because we get stacks of the stuff, don't we?
And also, I presume, appealing for children to eat and try.
Yeah, we have a lot of children that are quite fussy with the food. We're quite a typical nursery where we have children turn up in the morning with a big bag of Haribo, lollipops in the mouths. Parents will greet them at the door again with, you know, your Sour Patch Kids. Have you had a nice day? And, you
know, look what I've
recoiling
got
inside.
Lollipops.
Yeah, oh. we're part of the, you know, the sugar smart schemes and everything like that. And our local authority are really good as well. They seem to be seeing the value in healthy eating. They've got a healthy schools award, and they've just changed that to healthy early years. So I'm on the panel of advisories for how we develop that as well. Because if you look into the research in terms of the gut microbiome and, you know, eating healthy, moving, sleep, you know, there's such advantages for children and families in terms of mental health, you know, development. And I think it's something that really is missed. I think we talk a lot about supporting children with weaning, but we have this concept of treats with children, that we're going to take you out for a treat, and it always revolves around food. You know, my children do it. Are we having a treat this week? And I'm like, yeah, we'll go for a walk. And they're like, you're so boring. Can't we have something? And I'm like, but it's not a treat. A treat is a huge bowl of salad. You know, I'll buy you a bag of sweets, but please don't call it a treat. It's not a treat. You know, it's, and this is where we end up with people that struggle with their diet. They're putting themselves on diet and saying, I can't eat that food. And they're restricting themselves and punishing themselves. And it's about balance. And it's about nourishing your body. And We do it when you're having a really bad day. We have it with staff and they're having a really crappy day. They go to the shop, they'll buy themselves a bottle of Red Bull, can of Red Bull Monster, honestly, the Monster, the staff drink, chocolate bar, crappy stuff from the shop. And you're like, that is not looking after yourself. That is not valuing your body.
You know, that's initial sugar hit that they get that high from. But then as they come down from that, it's just...
And nutrition's something, I suppose, that isn't taught. It's, they touch upon it slightly in school. And
so how have you developed your menu then at nursery?
I did used to get involved quite heavily with the menu, but I don't. Our chef Ryan, I leave him to it now. He's quite creative in how he does things, so he makes sure there's a balance of nutrition. We use the early years menu guidance and things, so obviously it balances the nutritional value out. He's quite good at asking the team, do we think this works? You know, how's that working out? We used to have quite carb-heavy snack in the morning because we were going to stop snacks to support children to eat the lunch more, but we have children that will come in and not had any breakfast.
Yeah.
So we still do that, but we've changed that now to fruit, so they're getting that hit, instant hit of something nutritious in them, and it's not too heavy enough that they're not going to eat the lunches. We used to have a lady that worked for us in the kitchen. She used to blitz everything to death so they didn't see it. And he's like, absolutely no chance. They will see that. They have an understanding. So his assistant will go into the rooms and she'll help let the children prep the food. It obviously doesn't actually get eaten, but they have a go at chopping things, looking at where things have come from. You know, I mean, to be fair, you put food in a tough tray, they will eat that all day long.
Absolutely.
You put it on a plate, not a chance.
Yeah.
And we've had to really evolve how we how we encourage children to try new foods, because as soon as you've got a table of 16 children sat down and one goes, I don't like that, the other follows suit. Yeah,
but the rest of the table don't like it,
do they? Yeah, at the moment we have like a poster and it's Superstar Eater and we write the name on it, take a picture of them and they get a sticker and that's working brilliantly. But we know
children will do anything for a sticker, won't they?
Yeah, but we know it'll only last, it'll run its course and they'll get fed up of it, it'll lose its value and we'll have to step it up and change it again. But parents are so worried about the children not eating, so we'll get phone calls, they've not eaten the lunch, we did offer them fruit, but do you think they should be eating more? And like, they're here for 4 hours, they're not going to die of starvation. Yeah. Please don't
and
panic.
Children will naturally eat when they're hungry.
Yeah.
And if they're not hungry.
But we have a lot of food anxiety.
And I think it's because also adults know, well, I need to eat now and it's lunchtime, so I'll have lunch, but are you hungry?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Does your body need...
People fixate it under 3 times they must eat a day, and it's just not the case.
Yeah.
So how have parents welcomed your, you know, predominantly plant-based menu?
It evolved quite naturally at first. We had a little bit of pushback. We had some parents that weren't happy and said that, you know, they felt like the children needed to be having the meat, and obviously I had the discussion about your protein doesn't just come from meat, you know. Got other protein sources. I'm a part of the Vitamin Angels program, so the food we get from them, it seems silly to be purchasing meat when we have the protein in other forms. So we did introduce 1 fish and 2 meat dishes a week. That's reduced again. Mm-hmm. And we do have some children that parents are plant-based and the families chose that. So we do have some children that still have a plant-based alternative, but a couple of days a week there is meat on the menu or fish. We, again, with the Vitamin Angels, we have dairy due to the nursery milk scheme. We still have milk that comes into the setting. So I think unless things... I know there are nurseries that are fully plant-based and I absolutely applaud them. And I would love to do it ourselves, but cost-effective-wise, we're almost punished for doing it because we don't get the support there.
Do you think that's because it's seen as a lifestyle choice?
Yeah.
Still.
Yeah, rather than, you know, it's still... a very nutritional.
Yeah, but we have a high number of children that are milk intolerant.
Yeah.
And if you look at the research around, you know, different ethnicities, you know, not all people process milk protein. They can't.
Absolutely.
You know, so we have a lot of children that are indirectly being punished for having a milk intolerance, you know, and that's not fair. You know, it needs to be fairer for them. So if children do require oat milk, soya milk, you know, a milk alternative, that should be readily available, but nurseries are having to purchase that. Or parents, I mean, we don't ask parents to purchase it, we do it. You know, it's not fair on families, but we have to, you know, we do kind of follow the NHS guidelines around the, you know, the eat well plate and things like that, so... We chucked Dicta's toes in the water of fully plant-based and, yeah, not ready yet, but it is something we would like to do. But
it's still a huge step forward, isn't it?
Yeah.
A huge step forward.
But we'd like to, as team are quite, they took it on board. They had a lot of questions. but again, I think it's something you need to really educate everybody on. And I think we have a community interest company we run alongside our nursery. And one of our other directors on there, she's plant-based as well, again, for health purposes. And like she says, we have a day where people can come in and they have the lunch with us and it's always soup and that's usually plant-based. But people say, well, why? And she says, because if someone comes in the door and says, I have this intolerance, we can say, it's okay, you've not got someone saying, I'll make you something different. You know, it's inclusive for everyone.
Being highlighted as different and inconvenient.
Yes. Yeah, definitely.
And, oh, you
can't
sit with us today.
Because he's taken everything to come in the door.
Yeah.
At least have it so everything's ready for them. You know, we have a community pantry where people can come and get anything that they might need. We do have parents that might pop in and grab a box of cereal. It's a case of if you need it, take it, it's there. And we always make sure there's plant-based milks and alternatives in there as well, so nobody's left out as such, you know. But it is difficult, but I think rather than being stubborn and like, we're just changing it, I feel like we need to take everyone along for the ride and make sure everyone has that understanding and that education around why.
And it's going to that holistic approach, isn't it, with children and families.
Yeah.
and how this could benefit them as
definitely.
A family.
Yeah, and obviously where we are, we're in a big farming region as well, aren't we? So yeah. We're totally upsetting, isn't it?
Yeah, we have some farmers' children
the children go over and look at the animals on the farms and stuff. Like, you know, we have to embrace where we are as well and understand as community. So, yeah, tentative steps.
So do we take that further outdoors as well then? Do we grow vegetables?
We have an allotment,
yeah. Mm-hmm. And we're quite lucky the school that we're situated next to, they have their own allotment, so anything that's surplus comes to our CIC, so we can use that, either distribute it to families or we use it for the soups and prep meals. Mm.
This year the children are going to be growing.
So we have an allotment. We spend his weekends there. Like, oh my gosh, what is this? But again, it's lovely for them to come and visit it, see it from seed to grow
in. Do they help with the upkeep of
a little section they're allowed to. Yeah. Matt's like, get off my bees. Yeah. You do. I mean, when it's time to pull things out, they love doing stuff like
that.
Took
a lot of setting up and building.
When they went to see the sweet corn.
Sweet corn last year was amazing.
It was so high and they were like, oh! But it's that seeing it in a supermarket and seeing it
in
growing.
In its natural form, how it's grown.
Yeah, it's baffling for them, isn't it? But you see a different side of the children in that environment.
Do you find that they're more likely to try and embrace food?
Oh yeah,
when they've seen where it's come from.
You've built like a bit of a
decked area, veranda,
and they sit there and you're handing out things that you just pulled out of the ground and washed, and they love it, don't they?
Fruit tree. We've got some fruit trees, some fruit bushes, some berry bushes.
They absolutely love it.
Yeah.
Because it's just that they're in nature, they're in an environment that they love to be in, it's natural. And if we were to put it on a plate, they'd be like, mate, I'm out. But as soon as you give it to them in the hand, it's just been picked, it's straight in the mouth.
Yeah.
And it's that, I don't like that, okay, that's fine, shall we pick some for your friends?
Yeah.
And you tend to find if you take the pressure off, touching the tongue with it, they've got it on the lip.
I remember my youngest wouldn't touch a berry growing up. Wouldn't touch a berry. I don't know why she wouldn't touch a berry, but she suddenly decided one day she wouldn't touch a berry. Okay, that's fine. You're getting lots of fruit, but if you don't want to touch berries, you certainly don't need to. We went berry picking at a local... We just happened to see one driving on a motorway. Stopped. That'll be a nice activity to do. Well, I think she ate every type of berry that there was there. And, was then happy.
Yeah. And that's the thing.
Berries.
It's like as an adult.
It's about introducing them in a different context for them, isn't it?
And we can say, try it, it's nice. But to them, it doesn't mean anything, does it? We could be, adults lie to children all the time, don't they? It's that they have to do it on their own terms. And that's where that control comes in with children. Yeah. It's a battle of wills. And sometimes you've just got to let them figure it out themselves. But there's many a time we'll put a whole head of cabbage on a tough tray and some scissors, and they don't use the scissors, they use the teeth.
Just rip it.
They're in there. But they're trying and they're being brave and seeing the different textures and colours. And we do a lot of food play. And yes, I know a lot of people think that, when we have families that are struggling and there's food poverty, but,
it's sensory,
it's educational,
for them as well,
and it's being used, and sometimes it's surplus, isn't it?
Yeah.
So,
we do, if there is surplus, they do take it home, and there's a basket of fruit at the end of the week.
Yeah.
If there's surplus,
with Nick, sometimes Ryan, if he's got a lot of surplus ingredients, he makes meals and we'll sell it for like a pound for a portion for the children. So, again,
and I bet that's highly attractive to parents, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Because they know it's nutritional. Mm. They know where it's come from.
Yeah.
It saves them the headache of having to cook after a long day at work.
And we've done the family size portions before for like £5, and that tends to go well, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's just thinking of how we can help each other, and like say, if parents don't have the knowledge or just can't, when you get home, you don't always want to cook, do you? I mean, because we eat pretty fresh once we get home, it's cooking, but that's my downtime. I enjoy cooking. It's something, my background is that. So, but a lot of parents either just haven't got the capacity to do it because they don't know how, or they can't afford to turn the gas and electricity on, or the child's screaming, and it's just, how can we just help each other to get through it more than anything else?
And if somebody's offering you a already prepared nutritional meal,
pile.
And as a kitchen assistant likes to throw some cheeky like cupcakes in there with courgette hidden in them. So parents like, we can eat these.
She's really good at baked goods, and then she's really taken on board sort of the plant-based cakes and muffins and things like that, and she's getting really good at it.
And sneaking veg and beans and things into it. She's really good at sneaking things in.
Beans in muffins?
Oh, you can put those in.
Really?
Yeah. We make a breakfast cake, don't we? We've made a cannellini beans and stuff at home.
Really?
I don't think we'll bring that to the kids yet. They might wretch, but... it's been creative, though, isn't it? And just thinking outside the box.
Yeah.
And it's just that, don't be afraid of trying new foods and don't be afraid of putting things with what we wouldn't normally conventionally put it with, you know. You can play around with food and there's no rules. That's a new one. I made
cannellini beans in a muffin.
Mix it into you.
Beetroot, courgette.
She makes courgette.
Yeah, I get the beetroot, I get the courgette and the carrot.
Yeah.
The beans is,
What was that cake you made the other day?
Chai.
She
made a chai cake, chai tea.
Chai tea.
My 19-year-old was like, ugh, it looks awful. What's it got in it? Is it vegan? I was like, yes, it's vegan. And he was like, oh. And then anyway, I was like, try a little bit. And he was like, oh, go on then, I might have a bit. A bit bigger. I'll have a bigger piece. I was like, I thought you might.
Couldn't have been that bad then.
No, definitely not.
So do you still manage to include that into nursery life in the winter?
Yeah. I mean,
we do the outdoors, growing.
We've got use of a space, the school next to us, that are really, really supportive, really helpful. We've adopted the piece of their land called the Orchard. It's really comical because it's got like four baby trees in it. It's called the Orchard. But it's just a great space. And we've just done the Nature Schools grant. We've just been awarded that. So we've just had some training. We've been given some dens and some gardening equipment. Yeah. So the staff have started to take the children over. We've started it in just small groups for now, just to see, get to used to the space and, you know, how the children deal with it. But the idea is to start pretty much, I don't want to call it a forest school, but that's what it always ends up being, but where children are just spending more time. Any learning outdoors
is suddenly labelled a forest school, isn't it?
Well, our outdoor area looks like a dump site because everything's deconstructed for the children. It's mud central. I went outside to show some families around yesterday and one child looked like he had leeches all over his face. It was just big splats of mud. And I was like, so if you come here, please don't send them in anything decent. Some of the babies that had gone out, they'd not put the mud suits on because they were just wanting to get outside. And I was like, oh my Lord, one child was black, but they love it. They're absolutely with the difference in personalities in some children from inside to outside.
Yeah. But also, they're not gonna, if they are concealed in a mud suit or wetsuit from the tip of their head to the tip of their toe.
Not very sensory, is it?
They're not getting the same experience, are they? Of the weather, of the texture, of the smell.
We have a lot of parents that'll say, they're full of cold. I don't really want them playing outside today. You know, I'm like, yeah, but they don't get colds from being cold. They get colds from picking up a bacteria or a virus.
But they're more likely to get indoors in a confined environment.
Because that's ingrained in people that you get cold, you get ill. Yeah. You get wet, you get ill. No, you don't. It doesn't work like that. But obviously then that's a different story. But, I mean, we've got one child that's allergic to the cold. She has an EpiPen.
Yeah. That's fun.
Yeah.
And is it a certain temperature? Or
just when she gets cold. Just when she physically gets cold. And her mum's an outdoor practitioner.
Wow.
Yeah, we're like, why is your child allergic to the cold? But, you know, again, it's just the thing, the joys of running a nursery.
So is it just when her body temperature goes below a certain level?
Yeah, and she has the EpiPen reader. But this child loves to be outside with no coat on and to be free.
Yeah.
She hates it.
But if she's running around
and
she's exploring, whether it's cold or not,
you presume
her body temperature is going to stay.
Well, we say this, when children are outside, if they don't want to wear the coat, that's fine, take it outside. If they're running around, they're going to be warm. Mm. And if they get cold, they'll come and tell us that they're ready to put the coat on. But summers are always enjoyable because it's the mud that you would think wouldn't be mud is still mud because it's like a water park outside. Water play with hoses, and the children come in now, you know, like the sun suits. They come in wearing them now in the summer because they're permanently wet. And the staff, honestly, what are they like? They have to bring changes of clothes. Everyone's just wet.
I find summer weather a bit more difficult to plan and supervise and ensure that they are safe than they do cold weather.
Well, we put up canopies, don't we? We're quite lucky, one of his nurseries, because the sun goes behind the building, so we have like half shaded. But yeah, where there's an outdoor play is a lot to plan for. You know, it's so beneficial, but yeah, you've got to consider making sure there's water outside for them, and they've definitely got lots of clothing appropriate for the weather. And but the
benefits, your risk assessments can change drastically, can't they, on the weather?
Definitely.
It's and the children that are accessing the environment as well.
Sunscreen and things. I mean, we run healthy holidays, so we're quite lucky. We got SunSafe, right? We got SunSafe accredited, and we have like a dispenser for sun cream, which is really good, but it's so expensive.
You got your first fill free, obviously.
But I presume it's quite difficult to get a sunscreen that all children
exactly. We just get a sensitive. Okay, most parents, we have honours agreement that they will have ours, because it's easier for practitioners to use one sunscreen than it is to be changing, washing hands between different ones. So
yeah, it's taken a while to find one that suits everybody.
Yeah, definitely. But and one cheap enough to be able to use as well, because
it needs applying a lot, doesn't it?
Yeah,
in hot weather.
Yeah,
more often than you think, really.
Yeah. Definitely.
That's quite time consuming when you have a lot of children.
They're all lined up, ready. Yeah. Get ready. Be prepared.
One squirt, give it a rub.
And then there's always patches, isn't there, where it's not
being quite rubbed in.
Yeah.
But it's well protected, that one area.
Streaks all over the faces. And you're like, why have you got one red patch? And they've just missed a little section. Oh, terrible.
And do you find a difference between genders with outdoor play and learning?
Because
there's lots and lots of research out there at the moment to say, to support boys' learning of literacy and communication and language is better outdoors than indoors. Do you find that?
They seem to thrive more outdoors.
They love the open space.
The freedom. I think it's more of a freedom. It's more adventure for them, more risk taking, definitely with the boys, because we built a like a monkey bar. They have a monkey bar section,
and a rope,
and things that they love.
We do a lot around. We did some research with someone around core development, so we kind of really brought that into the nursery, didn't we? Where we've got the, what are they called? Where they climb up the climbing blocks,
climbing wall,
and ropes to pull up, and again letting them take risk. We have this narrative of, oh, get down, it's not safe, whereas we're like, that's an interesting choice, let me just come and stand closer to you, what could happen here? And it's giving children the autonomy over, are you safe? And they will say, yes, I am safe.
Consequences as well, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And again, a lot of parents don't, you know, the idea is to protect your child, and it's very fear-based, and you know, God, please don't do that, you're going to hurt yourself, you know, rather than, it's a very interesting choice to balance precariously on that wall.
Because if you just think about when your toddler's learning to go up the steps for the stairs for the first time, and the way that they crawl, and then they're taught to turn round and come down on your bottom.
Yeah.
But then trying to develop a child to stand on something and jump can be very difficult, because they will naturally turn round and come down the way that they've been taught.
Yeah, we have the tickler triangles,
yeah,
and we find that in the baby room. They'll climb up as far as they know they can go and come back down. You don't necessarily always need an adult to support them, because they will do what they're comfortable with. You know, they're very clever that way, children, and I don't think we give them the credit for that. But
and they have to learn, don't they?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And so, yeah, accidents happen, they do, but that's how they learn that it wasn't safe, and they learn how to put the hands out to stop the falling, and you know, distance, judging the distance they've jumped, and there's definitely a lot of risk taking in our nursery. Sometimes I go outside and I'm like, I'm going back in. I can't deal with this right now.
So how do you incorporate that into your risk assessments then?
Obviously we do visual checks every day, as risk assessments, just making sure, you know, pretty standard risk assessments. And I think the risk assessments base is the staff, them making that judgment. And we do have some staff that say, this is making me really anxious, I'm just going to get somebody else that I know is a lot more confident to swap with me. you know, a child that might be balancing on a corner or something, and you're like, is that safe? And they're like, yeah, I'm fine. You can stand there to catch them.
Or... You don't want to inhibit that.
No, you don't.
No, not at all. It's like, we're developing confidence, and, you know, with the confidence in them, and with many times they fall, and you're like, you know, oops, you know, what went wrong? How could you do it differently? And please don't ever do that again. But, you know, what would make that safe? Because this is problem solving that we want children to learn and develop. You know, as much as we want them to, if they ever fall out with another child, we want them to be able to have that negotiation skills, or have the, you know, the ability to be like, I really want that, but can I have it after you? You know, these are skills we're developing, but the same has to be said about a child's safety, you know. We've always said we used to have toasters in our preschool room a few years ago, didn't we, where we teach children how to make toast, because we have children that, from a child protection perspective, they might be getting up in the morning while the parents are still asleep, alcohol or drug induced, or they're just still asleep. And,
they need the skills to access a little bit of breakfast before they go to school.
Definitely. So we really try to give children the opportunity to learn how to use knives correctly. You know, electrical equipment. It's not a case of don't touch that. It's a case of, right, what could happen? Do you understand? Really making sure we're teaching the children about what's safe, how to keep themselves and others safe as well.
And it's about trying to maintain that it's proportionate, isn't it?
Yeah, and giving them credit, because a lot of them are really, really capable. They just need that education, don't they, and knowledge about, you know, what they can and they can't really do.
Like learning to pour your own drink for the first time, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, whether it's going to overflow or, you know, or whether it's just enough for what you need.
A lot of staff, it's really interesting. A lot of, when you watch staff with children, children will struggle to do something and they instinctively go to help them. You know, I was sat in the baby room yesterday. We've got someone that's just qualified as an early years teacher, and she was sat with a child. We were talking about some intensive interactions and things on how to support children that are scratching each other at the moment. And she was sat with a child on the knee, and he was trying to tug something apart, and she went to grab it, and I was like, no, stop. And she was like, but he can't do it. And I was like, I know he can't do it. Let him figure it out. Like, if he gets frustrated and upset, we can help, but just give him the opportunity to figure it out for himself. Like, it's okay to let them struggle. It's not it's not a problem. If anything, it's better. Let them, allow them to do it.
Yeah, because ultimately, we don't go through life, do we, with somebody running in and
doing everything for you.
We had a parent came in the other day to do a settling in session with a child, and I think she's 18 months old. She picked up a box with some bricks in, and her mum was like, whoa, it's too heavy for you. And I was like, no, it's not. She picked it up. Leave her. Let her carry it. You know, she's building that strength up.
Yeah.
And she was like, oh, I never thought of it that way. And I was like, yeah, just leave her. She trips and drops it. She trips and drops it. We can pick them up. It's fine, you know. And she was like, oh, yeah, never thought of it. But it's that, isn't it? We rush in to help them. We rush in to fix things. And sometimes we just need to sit back and be a little bit more patient and observe.
Observe, yeah, definitely. Yeah,
but I think we are taught, aren't we, don't let the child be upset, because we don't want to develop any trauma, and what's the right time. But, you know, if we're there, if we're a calm presence and we're there with them, that's okay.
But then that's almost saying that you were going to go throughout life without being upset, isn't it? It's a very real...
Well, there's a new concept of parenting, isn't there? Is it bulldozer parenting?
Yes.
Is it where we clear all obstacles in a child's life?
Yeah, and it's just rosy path all the way through, isn't
it? But resilience is everything.
Yeah.
Like, you know, personally, from my experience, you know, I was in a domestic abuse relationship, and, you know, my children were witness to that. And, you know, I spent a long time with guilt, you know, what have I put my children through? What have I done to them?
I bet your children have got so much resilience from absolutely that, amazing. Haven't they?
My 19-year-old son, who we had to have counselling together, because I didn't realise he ended up becoming the perpetrator once my ex left.
Yeah.
Which was really difficult, but I were not in a place to deal with that, so we'd be head to head a lot of the times.
I probably didn't recognise that. No,
not all. And we had a guy that came in. It was called the Respect Programme, and it was absolutely phenomenal. And he is just the most level-headed. He's just amazing, isn't he? He really is. But I think when we have families at work that are like, what is this doing to my child? I'm like, it's an experience, and if we deal with it correctly and we walk together and support you, you will come out of this better.
All experiences build to a more level-headed, well-balanced individual, don't they?
So adversity will build strength. It's not something that we have to be fearful of and completely avoid. If, you know, if we manage it well, it can actually
recognizing it. And,
definitely.
Right, so that concludes today's episode. Some really good discussions there. Thank you for your time, both of you, and we look forward to our next one.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for having us. It's been lovely.